Memory Static is a listener-supported podcast. Your contributions really make a difference in helping us keep the show going. So please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/memorystatic. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Memory Static, the podcast that digs up the movies you loved when you were little, talks about them, and throws a party to watch them. I'm the host of this thing, Bailey Moore, and it is my privilege to introduce my guest tonight, a very special person to me, aka my mom, Kathy Moore.
Hello, thank you for having me, Bailey.
I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm pretty excited to be here.
You have any idea like what's going to happen tonight other than watching the movie?
Well, I have listened to a few of your podcasts, and I do know that I get to be split in two, and I cannot wait for that moment. I'm just delighted to be. I always feel like I'm chasing my own tail anyway, and now it will be a reality.
Great. So what movie are we going to watch tonight?
We are watching The House on the Haunted Hill. Not any of the silly remakes, but the real one, the original one with Vincent Price.
Great. So at this point, I mean, you've listened to all of these, so you know. I normally ask my guest why they chose the movie that they chose, but the truth is we're doing this movie because I asked you to. But, you know, even if I made this movie one of my choices, which I probably would have eventually if you hadn't said yes, I'd want you here to talk about it. So I guess before we move on, I just want to know how far removed is House on Haunted Hill from what your choice would have been if I hadn't pressured you?
Oh, let's see. Well, I might have picked one of the Dark Shadows movies, or most likely the original Haunting.
So we're not too far off.
No. This is way up there in my very tops of tops.
Great. Okay, that's a relief. So, when did your interest in the paranormal begin?
You know, I can't say that there's an exact moment in time where I could discern that that was when it happened. However, there were signs going back a really long way. For example, when I was a little girl, I loved to color. Had a special spot that I colored on the floor, all stretched out on the floor. And my parents, and I think I was maybe six, gave me a wedding coloring book. Now, no thoughts in their minds, I'm sure. But I was having a blast coloring it. And I was doing really well, I thought, until I got in trouble. Because my mom didn't like the fact that I had colored the wedding dress black and the veil black and her face black and her arms black and her shoes black and the ground black and the church black. Everything was black. The whole page was black, but it was so pretty and opaque. I loved it.
And what color are you wearing tonight?
Black. Have a black hat and black dress and black, very spiky shoes.
Yeah, no, you look great.
Thank you. Thank you.
So that's when it started.
I obviously was drawn to the darkness. But you know, it was little things, little shows at the time. I always liked to be scared. I loved scary stories. And, so I think it was just a kind of a natural evolution from there.
I want to skip ahead really fast just because like, I feel, you know, it kind of relates, but I obviously like was really drawn to similar things when I was little. Yes. How did you see that? Like, how was that manifesting where you thought it was okay to show House on Haunted Hill to me when I was 3 years old?
You were actually four.
I feel like it was three.
Well, you can feel like it was three, but you were probably four by at least 2 days.
Well, it's a big difference.
You were a very precocious little child and, very forthcoming in what you thought and what you liked. And you were very interested in spooky stuff from the get-go. And I, being a very wise mother or stupid, either one, I mean, this could border on child abuse today, but at least it wasn't Chucky.
Well, living through your own personal experience too.
Right. And you handled it exactly like I thought you would. So I was dead on the mark there. Now, I would not have let your sister watch it at that age. No way on the planet. I probably wouldn't have let her watch it when she was 10.
No.
But well, I mean, she was more sensitive.
It was around, though. I think she couldn't help but see parts of it. Well, you know, like we kind of made a habit of scaring her a little.
Oh, I know. And now she watched things that are way too scary for me. Well, I can't do it.
She prefers the horror movies that are, you know, much more than what I gravitate toward. Like,
right.
A little scarier, a little more violent.
And a lot more intense.
Yeah, more intense. That's a better way to put it. I still really like the paranormal stuff.
Right.
And I know you like the like B horror movies.
Oh, absolutely. That was another thing. You know, grew up, of course, we only had three channels when I was growing up. And when the UHF channel showed up, we were very excited. And a lot of B sci-fi films, I could list them all, but that would take a long time. But watch those over and over again, you know, the giant ant and who else, you know, whatever else. I was not a real big fan of Godzilla, but all the other stuff I was. And then, of course, anything that had to do with a haunted house or the paranormal. I had my parents fooled, by the way. They thought I was brilliant. somewhere around fifth grade, I guess, I started going to the library and checking out books from the psychology section and everything I could find on paranormal activity. And I would take these gigantic books home that I could barely carry. And my parents were under the illusion that I read them. But I did not. I tried very hard, but I was just 10 or 11. And
The language was probably very difficult.
It was
like
all
Shakespeare.
It was all scientific, and most of it was in equations. And I'm sure it was a lot of data with, you know, the way they shocked rats or something like that to see if they had any paranormal abilities. But, you know, it was way beyond me. But every week I went and did it all over again, thinking I would find the right one that I could understand.
So you could be a ghost hunter.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
So, what was your favorite bit of spooky pop culture when you were young?
Well, I think I mentioned it earlier.
Yeah, you
did. It had to be Dark Shadows. Absolutely. I was passionately in love with Barnabas Collins. I knew he was coming for me one day. I was absolutely convinced of it. I was so convinced I had third grade class convinced of it too.
like seriously. He's coming for Kathy.
Yes, he's coming for me. And if y'all want to go with me, I will talk him into it. Oh, yes.
So you'd say you've always wanted to be a vampire.
I've always wanted to be a vampire.
Yeah. Well, you know, like that's something that we have in common. I used to be like, where's my vampire?
It's, you know, it's something about control of power, I think, is really all that is. And because obviously he's in control except for his own soul. But other than that, he's got it down pretty much. But I think my mom was the one that actually came across Dark Shadows. Because she was, at the time, a domestic engineer, as most women were back then. And
I've never heard that term before.
Well, that
I
was
really like
that was the early politically correct term.
Oh.
Yes, the early one. And it's evolved since then. But she would watch soap operas, but, you know, most of the ladies that were at home watched things like The Guiding Light or As the World Turns, the serious ones. Well, ABC decided to give it a go, and they came up with what was going to be called, I can't remember what it was originally going to be called, maybe Shadows of the Night or something. I don't know. I'm making that up. But anyway, it was bad. It was so bad that they thought they were going to lose all of their backing. So they ran back to the drawing room, and somebody came up with a brilliant idea. Let's make it a farce. Let's make it a parody, and we'll throw in a vampire. Maybe a witch. And that's how Dark Shadows was born.
Wow, so it wasn't even supposed to be paranormal?
No, no.
Wow.
Not originally. They saved themselves, never dreaming that the audience that would save them were 9-year-olds.
Well, you know, sometimes you're like the audience you get is unexpected.
That's right. And, you know, as soon as my mom said, you might want to come home right after school for this. Well,
she thought you'd like it.
She thought I would like it. So, school got out at 2:55. The show started at 3:00. And literally, we would walk till we got to the end of the hall. And as soon as we hit the outside, we would run home to see the last 15 minutes of the show.
Oh, so you didn't get to see all of it?
No, couldn't make it in time.
Oh.
I know. Now, when Josette fell off the cliff, I begged my mother to let me stay home sick so I could see if she came back to life or not. But she wouldn't let me.
Oh,
I know.
Would you have let me?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But it's worth a try.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think I've told you this before. Like, when I'm doing research for the podcast, I have Dark Shadows playing in the background because it's on Hulu. Ah. And it's one of those things, like, you know, it's nice to look up every now and then and see the kind of gothic Victorian black and white cobwebby stuff. But you don't really have to be paying attention to it.
No, no, at all. You don't. No. I've watched reruns of it, and it's just pretty sad. But to an 8, 9, 10-year-old, it was pretty incredible at the time.
You bet.
Yeah.
So what was your first memory of watching House on Haunted Hill?
Well, that's another really early one. I've seen it a lot of times, I have to be honest, but I have not seen it in at least 8 years, maybe 10. So it will be fresh in sort of a way tonight for me. But the first time I saw it, I was once again somewhere between 8 and 10. And we were on a family vacation, and we stopped at a motel, and my parents wanted to go eat dinner by themselves. Imagine that, after being in a car with two kids for who knows how many hours and I don't know how many days.
Are we there yet?
Huh?
Are we there yet?
Are we there yet? And they decided that we were old enough to stay in the room by ourselves. And we were not allowed to look out the curtain, because then somebody would see the curtain move and know that there was somebody inside. But we were to lock the door, and we could look out the peephole. So as soon as we locked the door, we drug the chair over so we could climb up and stare out the peephole, which we did quite often. And then we started playing with the television. And lo and behold, came across The House on the Haunted Hill. And so my brother and I watched it and were absolutely, you know, totally engrossed in the whole thing, and that was the first time I saw it. Now, I can't say that that's the first time I saw a Vincent Price movie. I really don't know, but I know I watched The House on the Haunted Hill in a motel room by myself with my little brother.
And you knew Vincent Price after that?
Oh, yes.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, that's an important point.
Oh, yes.
So, speaking of House on Haunted Hill, I didn't tell you about this, but I was able to snag an interview with the skeleton from House on Haunted Hill.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
How did you manage that?
You know, I pulled some strings. So
I'm surprised he was available.
Well, me too. But
he's been around a long time.
Well, I'll play it for you now.
Okay.
I am so thrilled to have you here tonight. When we started organizing this screening party, I never in a million years dreamed we'd be able to talk to anyone involved in the film, let alone someone that got real FaceTime.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. It's nice to know House on Haunted Hill is still enjoyed and my work is still appreciated.
Well, it certainly is that. By my mom and me especially. I'm really excited to talk to you and get your personal recollections, but firstly, I want to thank you for clearing your schedule to be here. You must be super busy with horror conventions and whatnot.
Well, you'd think that, but actually, no. You see, I'm classified as what we call in the industry a prop.
Oh.
And props get very little recognition for all that we contribute to film. We are often not credited, and our handlers get paid more than we do. No. To get booked for a gig at a horror convention, or any convention for that matter, you have to be big, flashy, a pop culture icon. And not all of us can be the DeLorean. No, this time of year, the best gig that a specialized prop like me is likely to get is interactive theatrical work like a haunted house. But many of us can't even get those without the right credentials. And then you take what you can get, which is more likely on someone's front lawn, in a low-budget production with two-dimensional competition. Yes, you may work your fingers to the bone, but without credentials, it can be murder.
Oh, that's unfortunate. But surely you have the credentials. You have your own IMDb page.
Oh, sure do, sure do.
And along with House on Haunted Hill credit, Skeleton appearing as himself, I see you are also listed as playing a role in Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh, yes. Ray Harryhausen, what a true visionary. I got the call because Ray saw my work on The House on Haunted Hill and knew that I had the full articulation needed for the role. It was definitely my favorite role, dampened a bit by his failure to credit me as William Castle had done. I'm sorry if I sound bitter. I love the work, but it can really suck the life out of you. Pounded flesh and all that, you know.
I see one more listed credit.
I'd rather not talk about that if you don't mind.
Oh, well, not at all.
Everyone has at least one in the closet somewhere.
So, House on Haunted Hill. Tell me, what was it like to work with Vincent Price?
Oh, lovely man. We had to put many hours to our sequence together. It was like we were tied together in a delicate dance. But we had great chemistry, he and I, and that's not the kind of thing you can fake. He was a real natural in portraying the macabre. There was a man who appreciated the value of props when it came to making movie magic. He would say to me, he'd say that my work was very convincing, very death-like. And get this, I'd reply that his was very life-like. Just a little joke.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you again for coming. I hope you enjoy the party.
Oh, my pleasure. Now it's time that I get out there and raise the dead. Just a matter of speaking.
Geronimo.
Dog like skeletons, man.
Okay. So, yeah. Interesting, right?
I'm so sad that I wasn't here to meet him when he was here.
Well, actually, you will get to meet him because he's going to make a surprise appearance during the movie.
That's great.
Yeah.
Go figure.
We'll have like everybody talk about that after the movie.
Okay.
But I'm starting to hear people arrive. So you know what we're going to do now?
The time machine.
Yep. We're going to take a step into the time machine. So I know you're pretty much prepared for this. Right?
I am.
All right. Well, let's take a step in.
All time machine systems online. Systems go.
Well, this is it.
Wow. It's actually a little roomier than I expected.
You know, I get that a lot. But, you know, I think it's just, you know, it's small on one side. I mean, you didn't get to see the backside of it.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's like walking into a cave.
And I like caves.
Yeah, I know. I know you do. So are you ready to hear the story behind House on Haunted Hill?
I am dying to hear the story behind the Haunted House on the Haunted Hill.
The Haunted House on the Haunted
the
Hill.
The House on the Haunted Hill. Excuse me. Lots of haunted
stuff. Well, I mean, that's how we all said it.
Yeah.
The Haunted House on the Haunted Hill.
Right.
Okay. So the story of the House on Haunted Hill begins with the director, William Castle. Do you know anything about William Castle?
No.
Yeah, okay. Great. Then this all will be new to you. So William Castle got his intro into showbiz in a way most fitting to what he'd be doing later on in life, which was to direct this movie and others like it. So you might have seen some of his other movies. We'll get there. But I don't know if you knew this, but before the Universal monster movies and Bela Lugosi was cast as Dracula, he did a stage production of Dracula where he was Dracula. And that's how he kind of got his reputation as being like the romantic okay. Dracula. And so young William Castle at the age of 13 went over and over and over again to watch Bela Lugosi play Dracula. And at one point afterward got to meet him. And it was that interaction that led him to realize that he wanted to scare the pants off of people as a living. That's a quote. So Bela Lugosi kind of put in a request to have young William Castle to take a position as assistant stage manager for the touring version of Dracula. So that like he did several years on Broadway.
Okay.
Yeah. And then at the age of 23, he left for Hollywood and he got a reputation for being able to direct B movies on time and under budget.
That's my favorite.
Yeah. Well, he was very efficient at it.
That's great.
So after gaining that experience, you know, everything that he was directing was other people's projects, which wasn't enough for him. He wanted to do his own. So in 1958, he began directing his own films independently, starting with a movie called Macabre, which was budgeted by mortgaging his own house.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Which is
not the first time he did that. So, like, I'll come back around to that, too. But he was a someone that took chances and had faith in himself. Which I his whole situation is really interesting, and I'd be interested in reading his autobiography.
No risk, no gain, right?
Right. So this was the first film, Macabre. He used a certain gimmick to help promote the movie. And this is what he later became notorious for, was using gimmicks to promote the movies and to make them, have it more of an experience in the theater rather than just watching the movie. Adding on to watching the movie. So when Macabre was released, he gave everyone attending a certificate for $1,000 life insurance policy in case anyone died of fright.
Very clever.
Yeah. While watching the movie. And he stationed nurses in the lobbies and hearses outside the theater.
Oh my goodness.
So this is just him getting warmed up. So the second movie was House on Haunted Hill. But before we get that, I want to give some more examples of the gimmicks that he used, because I just love it. So the third movie, which also stars Vincent Price, is The Tingler.
Have you seen that one?
You've seen that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you remember what it's about?
It's been too long.
Okay, so refresher, and for everybody else listening, The Tingler is about a creature that grows on your spine when you're terrified, and the only thing that keeps it from killing you is to scream. And so Vincent Price's character discovers a way to extract the creature, but it gets away and runs amok in the dark, and because it's no longer confined to a human body. So for the audience experience, scattered throughout the chairs...
I'm having visions of that horrible ride that we took Cullen on when he was little that scared him to death with things blowing on him and poking him.
Yeah, it was similar to that. We're I've forgotten what that thing is called, but it's where they've got some kind of stimulus.
It's 4D.
It happens to you in the dark.
Yes.
They've got a Bug's Life ride at Disney World too that's like that.
Right.
William Castle got...
I think I love this man.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it great? And I'm not even done yet. So, William Castle got a whole bunch of airplane winged icers from the military surplus store. And they would vibrate when you turn them on. And he would attach them. He attached them to random seats in the audience. So when the Tingler was released from the human body and the lights went out, people got a tingle from the Tingler.
Oh, my goodness.
And he called this viewing experience Percepto.
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah, I think it sounds like an X-Man.
Okay.
So, likewise, in 13 Ghosts.
I've seen that one, too.
You've seen that one, too. It was directed in 1960, and he used something he called Illusion-O, which gave audience members special glasses, like 3D glasses, that were red and blue, and it allowed them to either reveal the ghosts when they appeared on screen or hide them if they were too scared to look at the ghosts.
Wow.
And then one more, and we'll get
to... He was so far ahead of his time.
It's super fun.
Oh, yeah.
But so there are directors that have since, like John Waters, for instance, was it's his favorite director, went to see The Tingler over and over again, trying to find the correct seat. And there was another director, too, I can't remember, who was very, very influenced by William Castle. But at the time, he wasn't respected very much by his contemporaries because he was known as being the B horror movie guy. In 1960, he directed Homicidal, which had a 45-second fright break for people to leave and get a full refund if they were too frightened. But this backfired.
Uh-oh.
Everybody left? they would go see the movie and then they'd come back and see the movie again or like they not like, they wouldn't leave the theater and then they'd go get their refund.
Oh.
So William Castle was like, he was like, what? So his response to that was to create a coward's corner. So if the audience member decided to leave during the 45-second fright break, there was a voice that would come over a speaker that said, "Watch the chicken. Watch him shiver in coward's corner with everyone watching." And he or she would have to follow yellow footsteps up the aisle to a yellow line that said, "Cowards keep walking." And but the shaming didn't stop there. They'd be greeted by a nurse that would offer them a blood pressure test. And then they'd have to sign a statement saying, "I'm a bona fide coward." And then they'd get their money back.
Okay. That I could see that backfiring as well.
Yeah. I think it's a little too much.
Yes. It sounds like he was a little ticked off.
I think, it sounds like he was a little pissed. So House on Haunted Hill. House on Haunted Hill, do you know anything about the gimmick that was used for this movie?
Nope.
Okay. So, you know the climax at the end.
Yes.
Can you describe it? And this is going to be a little bit of spoilers for everybody.
Oh, I don't want to spoil it.
Well, I mean, if they're listening at this point, you know, and they haven't watched the movie, okay. Stop right now and watch the movie. There, warning.
Okay.
Done.
Well, all right then. The the skeleton chases the evil woman towards the vat of acid. And he doesn't actually push her in. He just puts his hand lightly on her shoulder. And she's so terrified, she jumps or falls in, you know. Yeah. Acid or a skeleton. I think I'd pick the other, but, you know, go figure. And then it turns out that Vincent Price, who they thought was insane, was quite sane after all and was doing, you know, all the machinations behind everything in the first place.
Right. Okay, so when the skeleton rises out of the vat of acid before, you know, it starts to scare her, there were wire-rigged skeletons with flashing red eyes that were flown out over the audience.
Oh.
Which is awesome. And eventually kids, you know, got wind of this thing that was happening in this movie. And so they would go to see the movie just to try to knock the skeletons down by throwing, like, with slingshots and throwing movie theater concessions.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That went well with all the other guests.
Yeah, probably. So
it goes up, you know.
So this one also had a special name. Now, based on the other two, Percepto and Illusiono, what would be your guess for this one?
I don't know.
That's okay.
Okay.
It's spelled E-M-E-R-G-O. Which would
Emergo.
Emergo. See, when I read it, it's like Emergo, but like it's got to be Emergo. It's got to be Emergo. So House on Haunted Hill was his second independently produced film. And the gimmick was so effective that it impressed another director, a well-known director of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And it led him to begin steps toward his own horror movie, Psycho.
Okay.
Because he saw like how well that horror movie did.
Right.
Influenced by William Castle, he also created gimmicks for the promotion of the movie.
Really?
Yes. And I'd heard about it on a podcast, a really cool podcast about the story behind Psycho. But I could not find the examples online to talk about.
Oh, wow.
The only thing that I do remember is that he went through and bought all of the copies of Psycho, as many, like, all over the country, to try to keep people from reading it so that the ending was a surprise to everybody. Okay. but there was more to it than that. I just can't remember. All right, so there was one more gimmick that was used in House on Haunted Hill, which wasn't as flashy as the flying skeleton. So it didn't get a creative name, but it occurs at the very beginning of the movie. You know, like at the very beginning where it's pitch black.
Yes.
And it's just a woman screaming.
Yes.
And a man laughing.
Right.
And chains rattling and something else. I don't know if that had never been done before, but I don't think it was a very common thing, and it was really effective. And that part of that movie of House on Haunted Hill led to the popularity of creating haunted house novelty records.
Aha.
Yes. Which I had playing for everybody before the movie started.
Oh, I missed it. Or did I miss it? I guess I'm there.
Yeah, you're there.
I forgot.
Yeah, well,
I'm multitasking.
You'll remember. Yeah, you're multitasking. You're just not realizing that you're multitasking.
Till I go back together.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're single tasking in two different forms of energy.
Right. Which is
don't ask me how to explain that.
That's okay.
Okay. Let me find my place. Oh, right. So, Vincent Price.
Yes.
William Castle met Vincent Price one day after Vincent Price had been rejected for a role. I'm not sure which one, but to console him, William Castle took Vincent Price out for coffee and described his ideas for House on Haunted Hill. Vincent Price liked it so much, he signed on for the role of Frederick Lauren, the eccentric millionaire, and then continued with Castle in the following movie, The Tingler.
Okay.
So a quick detour, because I just want to mention a few things about Vincent Price, because he's such a lovely person.
Yes, he's amazing.
Yeah, just on top of being this horror B movie icon, he did lots of other roles besides horror, but that's what he's most well known for.
Right.
But on top of that, did you know that his education was in art history?
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that until I watched a documentary about him. He was a lifelong art collector and believed in art being accessible to the public and not just a privilege of the wealthy. So he donated his personal collection to start the Vincent Price Art Museum in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
And curated art for Sears, I think in the 60s, okay. 70s, called the Vincent Price Art Collection, which provided affordable prints of fine art, both personally selected by Vincent Price and commissioned by Vincent Price.
Wow.
So that the public could enjoy these works of art in their own homes. They just had to buy the print from Sears. Which I think is really cool.
Oh, yeah.
He was also a gourmet chef that authored several cookbooks.
Now, I think I did know that. I don't know where, but that's somewhere in the gray matter. I'm getting a hint that I knew that.
You might have. You probably did. Let's say you did.
Let's say I did.
I mean, effects of the time machine.
Who knows?
I mean, this is your first time in here, too.
Yes. Woo.
So, and then one more thing is that he was an avid fan of roller coasters.
Aha.
Isn't that cute? So, quickly, for the younger audience, or for those that never spent very much time with older movies,
mm-hmm.
If you were born in the 80s or like close to the 80s, early 90s, Vincent Price had his voice all up in there.
Oh, yeah.
Vincent Price voiced the character of Professor Radigan in The Great Mouse Detective, which he said was one of his favorite roles. And he did the spoken voice part of Thriller.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm.
That was not his first venture into music, though.
No, it wasn't. I thought that you might bring that up.
Of course I would, because I exposed y'all to that.
Yeah, you want to...
Being a 70s teenager, Alice Cooper was always top on my list. And in the album Welcome to My Nightmare, Vincent Price does an homage to the Black Widow spider and does it quite well, leading into the song Devil's Food.
Yep. And then he was also the scientist that created Edward Scissorhands in the Tim Burton movie.
Yeah. And that was so sad.
Yeah, it was a sad movie. Okay, so the musical composer, the musical composer of the film was named Von Dexter, and he worked with Castle on 4 of his horror films.
Okay,
and I love the music in the movie. You know, I didn't realize until I was much older that that woman singing is actually a theremin.
Oh, I know. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I didn't notice that until I was in college, and there was a woman that came who was a theremin virtuoso, and she made it sound like an opera singer, and I was like, oh.
I don't know how you become a theremin virtuoso. If you just go online and look it up and watch somebody that really knows how to play it, it is absolutely the freakiest thing you've ever seen. They play the air. They play the air.
Yeah. It's like, and it's just like the tiniest little movement.
Yeah.
So much power over the sound that's emitted.
It is the coolest thing. And for people that don't know, a theremin is the thing that makes the noise that goes, ooh,
yeah. Or, oh.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Very versatile. And it's also the sound, what we use to make the sound at the very beginning of this podcast.
Okay.
The intro. I mean, there were some other things involved, but we did use a theremin.
Okay.
But the theme of the movie was not written by Von Dexter. The theme, this is the very beginning and the end, was a song that was written by a songwriting team named Richard Loring and Richard Kane. And the theme originally had lyrics, but they were cut. And I think I understand why, because they don't really reflect the vibe of the movie. But I have them here. I'll just read a couple of them to you.
Okay.
There's a house on Haunted Hill where everything's lonely and still, lonely and still. And the ghost of a sigh when we whispered goodbye lingers on, and each night gives a heartbroken cry. There's a house on Haunted Hill.
Uh-huh.
Sounds a little more romantic.
Yes.
Yeah, doesn't it really?
It just inside I'm screaming. Not going to tell you why.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, you'll have to tell me off, Mike, then. So you can find a video on YouTube of the theme that's of a record, like playing the record. But it's not how it sounds in the movie. It's like more, I think, what it would have been like with the lyrics, except there aren't any lyrics. But it's kind of like a swinging beach party version of the House on Haunted Hill.
Oh, boy.
Theme. Yeah.
Party down.
Mm-hmm. The exterior shots
mm-hmm.
of the house in the movie.
Yes.
Was taken at the Innes House in Los Angeles.
And I know where that is.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah. My brother has a funny sense of humor as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So why don't you share that story?
Oh, well, Bailey was a very little girl.
And Chaney, too.
Chaney, too. I think it was our first trip to Los Angeles with y'all, which would have put you 6 and Chaney 4. Does that sound right? 7 and 5, maybe?
I think it was 5 and 3.
No, because we took y'all to...
I think we were still living with Grandma.
Well, it was right after your dad graduated law school.
Okay, well, moving on.
Anyway. So anyway, we go up into the Hollywood Hills because my brother knows Bailey loves this movie and he wants to show her the house. So we drive up and we stop in front of it, and Bailey, there's the house, and she's looking at it, and there's all the cool tile work that makes it absolutely recognizable.
It was nighttime,
but you could still see it.
I was barely looking over the window.
Yes. Yeah, she was terrified. But anyway, so my brother starts to turn around. He has to back around, which was the scariest thing in the whole thing for me because I thought we were going to fall off the hill. But at the time he's backing up, he goes, oh my gosh, I see a hand!
and I'm cowering.
Bailey screamed bloody murder and cowers down on the floor. And my brother's just giggling, and off we drive.
But, yeah, I remember like cowering down into the seat saying, drive, drive away!
That's pretty much right.
Yeah. So the Innes House was actually designed by the famous architect, Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yes,
built in 1924. And it's been in so many different movies and TV shows and stuff like that. But like, I had a little bit of a synchronicity with it, just like I did for the House and the Haunting with Watcher in the Woods episode.
Right.
And I think you might remember this, but right after you told me that you could do this
mm-hmm.
for this podcast episode.
Right.
I was listening to another podcast episode, and they mentioned the In His House in the context of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and they said that the In His House was for sale.
Yes, and you sent me the link.
Yeah, because I'd never seen inside the house before.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's just like a couple of things I thought you would like to know about some of the cast members. Okay. Not all of them, but just a couple really interesting things. Elisha Cook Jr. is the one that played Watson Pritchard.
Okay.
And other than Vincent Price, he's the actor that I've seen the most in other things. He did a lot of film noir with Humphrey Bogart, and he has a role in Rosemary's Baby. Speaking of Rosemary's Baby, I told you I would bring it back around to this. William Castle mortgaged his house a second time to secure the rights to adapt the book, Rosemary's Baby, to a film. But we know he didn't direct that, right?
Right.
Yeah. Roman Polanski did.
Aha.
So he had the rights to it, and but the studio wanted Roman Polanski to direct it. So they had them meet and left Roman Polanski to convince William Castle that he was the one that should direct it, because William Castle, what he really wanted was to get into, like, move out of the B movie and to make a respectable film.
Right.
And but after meeting with him, he's like, no, this should be yours. So he settled to just be producer. So he's the producer of Rosemary's Baby. Okay. And Roman Polanski also gave him a cameo in the movie. So when Rosemary is talking on the phone in the phone booth to her obstetrician, and there's a man that walks up to the phone booth, that's William Castle.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I'll have to watch the movie again just to see that. It's been a long time since I've seen it. It's a creepy movie.
It is. It's probably one of the scariest movies ever made.
It's very disturbing. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's not a whole bunch that really happens. It's just all about
manipulation.
Manipulation and not knowing that you're being manipulated by the people that you trust around you.
Until
it's terrifying.
Until it's too late. Yeah.
Yeah. Julie Mitchum, who plays Ruth Bridgers.
Yes.
The Scotch and lady.
Yes.
She was Robert Mitchum's sister.
Okay. All right. I can see that. Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Because I don't think she was in a lot of other things, but Robert Mitchum is very famous. Leona Anderson, who plays Mrs. Slides,
mm-hmm.
who has the best jump scare in the whole movie.
Yes.
she recorded a novelty record called Music to Suffer By. And it is amazing, and it is my new favorite thing. She was a self-proclaimed worst singer in the world and performs the songs in a somewhat operatic style. And it is really funny and terrible. And like some of the stuff, she says she did it to make fun of stuffy opera singers and like how they take themselves too seriously. But she sings some original songs and some standards. But like, if you're ever in need of a laugh, look up Leona Anderson, Music to Suffer By.
I'm so disappointed. I mean, all these years, I thought that was going to be me.
No, you couldn't sing that badly. Aww. No, there's no way. I will play it for you. Like, Rats in My Room is great. I Love Paris is hilarious. Anyway, yes. Okay, so we're
okay
out of, yeah, okay, so a couple more things.
All right.
The film was originally distributed by Allied Artists, and it was a very successful film, but the film has for some time now existed in the public domain, which might explain why I remember seeing it in clips of it in episodes of Freakazoid in the mid-90s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So everybody out there, keep that in mind when you're watching this from home. It's super easy to find. It's on YouTube. It's included in Amazon Prime for free. There are countless versions on DVD. The problem is that anyone can distribute it. So many copies floating around there are poorly edited and poor quality. But
there are good ones out there because I've seen them.
Yeah. All and... right. And you can use clips of it. And now, one more thing before we leave the time machine.
Okay.
There was a remake that was made in 1999.
Yes.
Did you ever see it?
Yes.
Oof. Woof.
Yes.
It's pretty much what you would expect a horror movie to be at that time, because horror movies were not very good in the late 90s, with very few exceptions. Jeffrey Rush plays Vincent Price, the Vincent Price's character.
Well, and you can't go wrong with Jeffrey Rush. I'm sorry, but yeah. Apparently the movie just was bad.
Yeah. But the character is renamed Stephen Price, and the character is notorious for his gimmicky scares used in his roller coaster theme park.
Oh, yes. That's exactly what the movie is about.
Well, but do you notice anything... anything similar to what we've
been
talking about?
Because Vincent Price loved roller coasters.
Vincent Price loved roller coasters, and William Castle was into gimmicky scares.
Yes, so apparently they just took the movie and remade it as to the people that were in and around the movie.
Yeah, it was like a homage to William Castle and Vincent Price, one character. But like, other than that, there's not a whole lot of similarities. Like, the house itself is not really a house. It's an old mental hospital. And it's actually haunted, and it's more about the ghosts and the haunting rather than it is about the people and how corrupt they are. And
is there a hill?
It is on a hill. It's more of a cliff, really.
Okay.
But it is elevated, so there's that. But I thought, until I learned that William Castle's daughter co-produced it, what I thought happened... So another horror movie that was released at the same time was The Haunting. Haunting came out and at that same year. The remake of The Haunting.
Yes, and I was thinking that and not The Haunted, The House on the Haunted Hill.
Okay, so you
have
not
seen that, no.
Okay.
I would remember.
Yeah, so no, this one, The Haunting has Catherine Zeta-Jones in it, Liam Neeson. And
it's okay unto itself, but it really went, it did not stick to the book.
The Haunting?
Yes.
Oh, I think it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's one of my, I mean, only because I love The Haunting so much.
Right.
But like, for me, like, we're kind of getting off track, but just real quickly, I dislike it so much because it was that period in time when people were like, "Ooh, CGI," and put way too much of it in it. And that one is like the epitome of that time period and like what they thought they could do and how great it would be, and it just wasn't.
When the real movie is about suspense and misdirection, you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I will say, however, that in the House on Haunted Hill, the remake, which I guess it is actually a remake, even though it doesn't feel like it, that they resisted the temptation to use computer graphics. So like their stuff is used, like they use camera tricks and animated stuff that's hand drawn over the film instead of computer graphics. And so I think, even though like there's some gaping plot holes and it feels like more like it was made for TV, it's much more watchable than The Haunting.
Okay.
Well, that's it. That's all I got.
Okay.
Is that enough for you?
I think so. I'm ready to watch the movie.
You ready to watch? Well, I mean, once we step out of the time machine,
I will have watched it.
You will have watched
it. Yeah, it's so hard to wrap your mind around this. Okay.
I know, but it will all make sense as soon as you step out the door.
I know that it will.
All right.
I am looking forward to being complete again.
Me too.
All passengers must return to their respective times. Goodbye.
All right. So we just finished watching House on Haunted Hill.
Yes, we did.
So we played a game while we watched the movie. I made these little envelopes for everybody, and they had a movie cue written on the outside of the envelope. And once it got to that part in the movie, you open the envelope. And it told you an action, and if that action applied to you, you were dead. But if it didn't,
you got to stay alive.
You got to keep playing. Yeah, you got to stay alive. So we actually had a few winners, and those winners were rewarded with $10 million.
Wah, wah, wah.
With... Wait, can you say that into the microphone?
I think it was $100,000 I got ripped off.
Oh, did I say $10 million? I meant $100,000. Because in the movie, he offers everyone $10,000. But yeah. No, I rounded for inflation purposes to $10,000. What? $100,000. You know, math.
That's getting closer.
$100,000. Yes. And so you played.
I did play, and I bit the dust in like the first 5 minutes. Because when my cue was it wasn't the first 5 minutes, but anyway, it was when the guy said the heads are missing and they talk to each other and then they cry. That was my cue. And I opened my little thing and it was like, you've been to the restroom since you've been here. Well, duh. So, yes, I was dead.
But we had a few people win.
Yes.
And now they're $100,000 richer.
They're just trying to find out where to spend the money.
Yeah, and Monopoly. I mean,
but it was a lot of fun.
Frame it and put it on your wall.
It was a lot of fun because everybody was watching very carefully to make sure they didn't miss their cue.
And there was a surprise, right?
There was a surprise.
Who did I promise was going to be here?
Bailey promised that the skeleton was going to make a personal appearance at the party, and he did. Will this go on his IMDb credit?
No, probably not, because it's not an actual movie. Okay. That he
flew down from the ceiling on a zip cord all the way across where we were all sitting watching the movie and smashed into Chaney.
Chaney. Oh, by the way, we have the one true princess here.
Yes, the princess is here.
Here.
From
I'd like
from
to
the
ask
frog.
Her a question before we open it to general conversation. So you remember watching this when we were little?
Oh, yeah.
And you hated it.
I did.
How'd you feel about it this time around?
That blind woman, I still hate her a lot. She did not grow on me. The past 20 years did not make that affection grow in any sort of
way. So you didn't like horror movies when you were little? You didn't like scary stuff?
No, because for me, I think I watched too many adult scary movies before I was ready to. I think I should have just started with Mr. Boogity and kept at that level for a while.
Yeah, but you like scary movies now.
I do. They're great fun.
But you still don't like this movie.
I still, well, you know, watching it, there are some really wonderful lines. And the acting is really, really well done. But I can't get over that woman. Why would you walk around the house with your arms up by your face in a claw motion.
And you're just a caretaker.
And with your mouth gaping open like you're about to sink your teeth into something. Why would you do that unless you want to scare somebody?
And then roller skate out of frame.
Was she really a very effective housekeeper?
Who knows? So, one of the first questions that I want to ask everybody, is there anybody else here that saw this movie when they were younger? Oh, okay, like I'll pass it down. Oh, that's a surprise, like this pleasant surprise.
Yeah, no, so I think this was like on Turner Classic Movies once. I was one of those kids, like that. I grew up watching a lot of that. Like that's how I saw The Blob for the first time and all that kind of stuff. But when I saw it, it was in color because they did a colorizing of this, and it makes the movie worse.
Boo.
This is the first time I've seen it in black and white, and like it's way more effective that way. It's just a nice spooky movie.
All the shadows are more dramatic.
I know, like it's so over the top, but it's like perfect for what that is. Like those harsh shadows on the wall, like it's so creepy looking, and like, I'm glad to have seen it in black and white now. I kind of actually like the movie a lot more on this viewing, despite the weird parts where it's just like, here's one plot twist after another, just in the final stretch. But like, as a kid, I really didn't like it.
Oh, interesting. But
it was, I think it was honestly because it was in color. Like, it just, it doesn't look nearly as good. Like, there's a lot of purple in it, actually.
It was and they, it's colorized. It wasn't filmed in color.
Yeah, no. And, like, they also make the acid, like, bright green. It just really diminishes some. Yeah, I know. It's bad. Yeah. So, like, that's what I mean. Like, I'm glad to have seen it this way now, actually. This is a really pleasant surprise for me, too.
So. Well, I'm glad you got to watch it with us.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the following questions we're gonna do a little bit different. We're gonna focus just on the movie instead of, like, you know, related childhood memories, because, you know, I feel like, you know, one of the things that I found really interesting in doing this podcast is, like, the difference between how we viewed it as a child and how we view it as an adult, and I can't think of one that more applies to this to me than this movie, because there are so many things that I tried to puzzle out, because you trust the adults to know what they're doing and you think that the adults know how to tell a story, and so if you don't understand something, you're just missing it. And so there were all these things that I tried to understand as a child, and so even as an adult, like, you know, I see them as maybe plot holes, but I want to get everybody else's opinion on how to fill this out. My mom wants to say something.
She is so my daughter. To this day, I am still trying to figure out how the rope can come up and twirl around her feet. I mean, and you know, as an adult, you know good and well that they just unwound it and then they ran it backwards. And that, but they did it in the opposite order, and you know that. But as a viewer, you want it to make sense for the plot, for the fact that these adults plotted to scare the bejesus out of this girl.
Uh-huh.
And it just bothers me that no matter what I do, it's like, okay, if there was a rope here and a rope there, I can't quite make it happen, and it bugs me.
Well, that wasn't one of the questions that I had had written down, but that's a really good one. Does anybody have any theories? Sorry. Oh, she has no something.
Clear and obvious theory, ghosts. Clear and obvious theory, ghosts, right? Like, ghosts.
So the ghosts were, like, collaborating with the murderers. That's a good one.
Magnets. What? Everything is done with magnets.
So she had magnets in her ankles.
No, there's like a magnet in the rope, and then there's like a little thing that turns under the floor, and then it just like spins around, and that's the only way I can think that could really happen.
So thank goodness we have like a maker here with us, a fabricator.
But what if she had metal shanks in her shoes? Wouldn't that have messed up the magnet in this situation?
That's why she stayed in the same place.
That's why she stayed in the same place and didn't move when the creepy ropes were wrapping around her ankles.
I have another theory as well. Obviously, you have one puppeteer in our midst with Vincent Price. So if she's been living with him for, I don't know, a few years, maybe she's seen this puppeteering and knows how strings work. So she taught the doctor, and while she's outside the window playing ghosty, he's manipulating ropes and strings, puppeteering.
She had the harness. She had the harness. That's how she was out there just floating, because she had that harness that she took off for.
Okay, so added on to this question, because this actually was a question I had written down. How does Annabelle get outside? The whole place is supposed to be locked down with a door of solid steel and bars in solid stone. How does she get outside and then back into her hanging harness to hang from the ceiling?
Okay, I messed that up. I'm going to answer the previous question.
Okay, answer the previous question.
So with the rope, it's actually really simple. Now we have those robots that act like worms and snakes that could go out and wrap around. So clearly what happened is the technology from Back to the Future is real.
Yes.
And they went back. And they went back and gave them that technology for the movie because Hollywood is all an inside job.
There's that DeLorean.
What are we talking about? I think... Oh, yeah, so, I mean, you know, they were in on it, so I think she just, there was like an attic hatch that they just went up in the roof and just, she just hung outside that we just didn't get to see in the movie. But I think ghosts is probably the more, the most logical explanation.
It's clearly ghosts.
It's clearly ghosts.
Obviously ghosts. Ghosts is what's happening.
Also, I need to mention that Mr. Pritchard was, I recognized him and it was driving me crazy. And like halfway through the film, I realized, oh, he was in an episode of Star Trek. So I just had to throw that in there. He was a lawyer. He defended Captain Kirk when Captain Kirk was accused of murdering somebody. Yes, Mr. Pritchard was in Star Trek.
That's Elisha Cook Jr. And he's all over the place. He's been in so many things. Salem's Lot. So many things.
I love him.
Wasn't Lance the guy that was in Lost in Space, the original Lost in Space?
I didn't actually look into that. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'll have to check IMDb.
What's the name of the actor?
We're looking it up now on the interwebs.
I think that it was done with mirrors, that she was never actually outside, that she was actually in the room, but... She never looked around. She didn't. She just stood there. She looked at her ankles and then she turned and got the gun, but she never looked the other way. And there was a door. That's how Lance kept getting into her room. So I think that she just snuck in there and it was all a trick with mirrors. Smoke and mirrors and puppetry.
I mean, at the end, they were saying something about their collusion and the secrecy in their plot. And they're like, but what about the housekeepers or whatever? Are they going to tell people? And they're like, no, they're not going to say anything. So I think that they were in on it.
The housekeepers had to be in on it with one of them or the other because they left early. And they left early because Nora wanted to go. And if they didn't leave early, she was going to leave, and she was the key to everything unraveling properly.
I'm sorry, but the blind lady on a skateboard couldn't do much help.
I think that Vincent Price told the housekeeper, like, can you just do this as you're leaving? Because, yeah, that's very bizarre for her to just be a creepy ghost person, basically.
The housekeepers are ghosts. It's
the
house, clearly
yeah,
ghosts.
The housekeeper, I think, was
those
paid
are ghosts.
Off
you
by
saw
Vincent
ghosts.
Price.
You're right. I think that it goes to the fact that the housekeepers were actually in on it because if the doctor told the housekeepers, "Hey, we need to scare this woman, go around and be scary," then it would make sense why the blind woman would be walking like that because there's no other explanation.
Exactly.
What do you think they promised the caretakers in that fact? Because one of the questions, one of the questions that I was going to ask was, what do the caretakers do? Because they just scare people and then leave early.
Well, their ultimate goal was to kill Vincent Price and gain all of his money. So therefore, they could give the housekeepers whatever they wanted.
That's good. They take care.
Obviously, the blind housekeeper doesn't actually clean or keep the house because there was a lot of spider webs.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, she couldn't see, and what was he going to do?
He probably couldn't see very well either.
Yeah.
Also, aren't chores a woman's job?
Well, in this movie. Speaking of women's jobs, I'm sorry. We all reacted when Nora was becoming hysterical and the doctor said, would you like a sedative? Because back then, that is what they did to the women. If they got upset at all, it's like, shut them down, babe.
Oh, okay.
I don't say anything about that.
Oh, go ahead. You don't have anything to say about that?
No. No, the housekeeper wasn't real, right? She was the housekeeper was just a straw woman anyway, right?
Well, but Pritchard seemed to believe that they were the caretakers, and And he's the one that allowed them to be in the house, right? He's the one that had like some kind of relationship with the house. Nobody. Okay. So
This side of the room thinks that the that the lady housekeeper wasn't even a real person. Just like a dummy, or like the skeleton was just like, you know, because she never moves, even when we see her and like Vincent Price is like, oh, here's the housekeeper. She's just like creepily standing there with her crazy hair. Yeah, she literally rolls forward and then just the man steps in. Like, I don't think she was ever a real person, just like literally a mannequin or a like. Yeah, just like a doll or a dummy.
I am a little concerned for her, though, if she is real and they leave that vat of acid open.
Yeah, yeah, take that acid out of that vat, right? Like, there's already been a homicide in there. Why hasn't that been removed?
Maybe I was in the bathroom, which is why I died one of the times. But what happened to the woman with the drippy blood?
Oh.
She's dying. She's just like, okay.
You know the drippy blood hit her a second time.
Did anything happen to her in the movie that I missed? Or did she just get dripped on and that was the end of it?
Yeah, that was in the end. Like,
so we found out what happened with everybody else, but not her?
Is there any explanation for the drippy blood other than ghosts?
Just to scare you.
Here, Eric, you want to take this?
As I saw it, that was the end of her storyline. She comes back at the end when everyone walks in the same room and they say like, oh, it was the perfect matter. But otherwise, it was ghosts that were dripping blood on her hand. And that was it. She was just there to interact with the ghosts.
You have to wonder if, because she was marked by the ghosts, as the guy said, they've marked you, if everywhere she went, the spot on the ceiling followed her and dripped on her.
Looney Tunes style, just straight like cloud over your head. That would be great. I like this world you've created, Mr. Castle.
It's like Eeyore's private rain cloud of blood.
Of blood.
Okay, so here's another question. Vincent Price and Dr. Trent, oh, sorry, Frederick Lawrence, Frederick Lauren and Dr. Trent seem to have very selective hearing in this movie, right? Because while Nora is losing it and being very vocal about it, like the best movie scream I've ever heard, they seem to only remark that they only heard organ music and someone walking. Why do you think that is?
Ghosts?
Okay, next question.
Team Ghosts.
Oh, wait, my dad has something to say.
About the organ music, I mean, was that to me was the most unnecessary scene in the whole. That's like Don Knotts. Ghost of Mr. Chicken.
Yeah.
What did the organ add to it, other than being able to say that line? Said, "Well, I heard somebody walking, and there was an organ music."
Just to scare Nora.
To add to the hysteria.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like there was one moment when this is aside from the questions that I have. There was one moment where Vincent Price asked, like, okay, so if Nora experienced hysteria, what did what was his name, Lance, like what did he experience? And the doctor was like, I'm not gonna say hysteria because he's a man.
I have a kindredness with Lance. I think that he was hit in the head with a skeleton.
The only way you could have hit your head in there was if you ran clear into the wall.
You didn't do that, did you?
You didn't do that, did you?
Nothing that money won't cure.
I'm really glad Lance has money, guys.
he walks away with $10,000. Okay, so, all right, this is the last question that I've written down. Watching this recently, like preparing for this, you know, like as I've watched this throughout my life, like the scales have slowly fallen off my eyes, like as we've gone, and like I understand it better and better every time I watch it. And this time around, like especially like in the modern conversation, I realize that everybody sucks. And so I want everybody's opinion to see, like, what's the most likable character in this movie?
I definitely don't remember everybody's name, but the guy that owns the house that gets really wasted and just creeps around being like, ghost.
Pritchard.
Oh, ghost. I mean, what does he do? He just kind of stares and makes weird, creepy things and holds this knife, right? Like, he doesn't really do anything wrong. He's just always drunk.
I think for me, the most likable character was Scotch Hand. That one. She didn't do anything wrong. She was like a little weirded out when blood started falling from the ceiling onto her hand. But other than that, she kept her cool. She asked for a drink. She got what she wanted. And she kind of hung out.
Yeah, we were just told that she had a gambling problem at the beginning, but we never really saw that except for that she said she frantically needed money.
I totally agree with you. And she had the most expressive eyebrows, and I was living for it.
Oh my God, that's so true.
Also agree on was Anne? Scotch Anne. She was, she was fabulous. She was glamorous. She didn't really lose her cool at all. And she just wiped the blood off of her hand with a handkerchief. Like, no Purell, no hand sanitizer needed. She's just like, oh, that's fine. She wiped that off. No, she was kept a pretty straight face except for those eyebrows. They were very expressive and very, I mean, she could do some good side eye going on. Yeah.
A lot of judgment in those eyebrows.
Oh, so much. Okay, well, the obvious is Lance, of course, because he is the hero that saves the day. But all of them are there for the money, right? None of them would be there if they didn't want the money. So I'm going to say the most likable person is Vincent Price, because he made no bones about why he was there. No pun intended.
And then he paid everybody.
Yeah, he was there to pay everybody off and set everybody up. And he was willing to see, you know, what justice would do in the end. So, yeah, I'm saying he's the most redeemable.
I think the most redeemable is Mr. Pritchard, because he's just getting drunk and looking around for ghosts. And, yeah, he's not hurting anybody. And, plus, he was the lawyer in Star Trek.
What about the skeleton?
So you've changed your tune for Mr. Pritchard.
Well, I mean, he was the most likable human, but I think the skeleton really wins it all.
Well, Mr. Skeleton, what do you have to say about that?
Well, it's been a real honor to be here with you this evening, and I'd like to say that I'm really thrilled that people are taking notice of my work.
Well, I'm so glad you were here too. To share this moment with us.
Skeleton was totally the most likable.
You scared everybody flying down from the roof. Yeah.
I do have one more plot hole question. Okay. If the whole point was to scare Nora into shooting
Frederick
Mr. Lauren,
mm-hmm.
why then did he try to drag Mr. Lauren into the acid, thus destroying all the evidence that Nora shot him?
That's a fair point, because Nora, I never thought about that, because Nora shot him and ran upstairs. Like, not only would she be like so out of her mind that she wouldn't think to drag him to the vat of acid, I don't think she'd be strong enough.
Okay, so this is something that has bothered me about this movie that I don't understand. Those coffins with the guns aren't labeled, right?
No.
So how does Vincent Price guarantee that she's the person who gets the gun full of blanks? So, okay, nobody can actually shoot anybody?
I always imagined that, like, it was just that one bullet that he shot at the vase, and then the rest of them
it's like
were blanks. Vase.
Okay.
But if you watch him, and the way he deliberately picks up a particular gun to give to her, because he was going down the row, went back and got one for her, and then kept going on.
Oh, that's a good point. So keep the microphone.
Oh, okay. Keeping the microphone.
All right. Well, so that was House on
because
High
I
Hill.
Thought of that when it was watching. I was like, oh, look, he went back. Okay. Sorry.
House on Haunted Hill.
Yes.
So, you said it was like 10 years since you've seen this movie.
At least, yeah. It's been a long time. But I've seen it multitudes of times.
Right.
I could.
Right, you probably watched it with me over and over and over.
Over and over again. And I watched it with kids across the street. And, oh, Chaney, you were not the only one. Amy High couldn't stand the scary woman either.
Who?
Her name was Amy High.
Who?
I was a teenager, or I was in middle school, and there was kids that lived across the street. They were my brother's age. And Amy...
Oh, of course.
People your age.
All right.
Not our friends.
No, not your friends. No.
We're with
my
you
friends. I had friends once, a long time ago.
Yeah, Amy High.
Amy and Betsy, they were twins, but they didn't look alike. Okay. And the scary lady scared her. I mean, and we got in trouble.
But somehow out of all those multitudes of time that all of us watched it.
Yes.
My dad never saw it.
I don't know how.
Were there any bells that were rung while you were watching it?
This would have been like more than 3 weeks ago, right? So I wouldn't I wouldn't remember it anyway.
Okay. Well, so how was your experience watching with everybody else?
It was a blast, actually. Vincent Price is a master. I watched him with different eyes tonight. And by the way, the venue was wonderful. But
yay, Ilya Nathan.
The little quirky smile he would have when he would leave a room, this knowing smile, but at the same time, what did he know? And, you know, like after the chandelier nearly hit Nora, he just looked at it, quirked that smile up on his, and walked away. It was like, was that because everybody survived, or was it because, oh, I know what my wife's doing now. I've got a handle on it.
Oh,
I don't know. It's real. And you see that smile every now and then. So I enjoyed that a lot, watching him and his manipulation of his emotions as he dealt with everybody. It was really a lot of fun.
It's funny that I haven't really watched it that way, but I've definitely watched it watching Annabelle and the way that she manipulates
the
situation.
She's great.
And like the lines that are that she delivers were like, you know, she's like, I wonder. But she totally knows whole time. It's really great.
It is. They're fantastic, both of them. A lot of fun to watch and especially analyze after you know the whole story.
Do you feel like learning more about the movie since you've rejourned your other self after coming out of the slow
and
moving
time
machine?
And that was quite an event. Thank you.
do you feel like you appreciate the movie more knowing all that background?
Well, absolutely. And it will, especially all of the little crazy little stunts that he did to get attention for his movies. The only thing that I can come up with that comes close in my post-childhood is, anybody ever seen the movie Caveman with Ringo Starr? Most hilarious movie ever. Oh, my goodness. They gave out a list of words so you would understand the caveman language ahead of time. And that's the only thing that I've ever known that did something like that as a stunt to get attention.
Cool.
So yeah, but apparently William Castle
was doing it before.
He was the beginner and the master of that.
So, well, I'm really glad that y'all were able to come for this event. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having us. And I'm sure that the skeleton would like to say a word of goodbye. I don't want to hog the mic, so I'm going to let him say a word of goodnight to you.
Oh, yeah. Let's ask our, you know, our other special guest. What did he say?
Ta-ta.
Well, with that... This has been Memory Static. Return your videos here.
I'm Frederick Lauren, and I've rented the house on Haunted Hill tonight so that my wife can give a party. Haunted house party. Haunted house party. Haunted house party. Haunted house party.
Memory Static is hosted by Bailey Moore and produced and edited by me, Eric Dumig. Special thanks to Bailey's mom, Kathy Moore, for being our guest on this episode, and also an additional thank you to the Skeleton for clearing his schedule and joining us for the show and the party. Thank you to Geronimo for hosting the party. Original music for this episode is by Bailey and Colin Moore. If you like the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon, and also if you're listening on iTunes, please consider liking, subscribing, and leaving comments about the show, as this will help us get out to more listeners. Thanks for listening.